This is the Lombardi Line with Mike Palm and Mike Pritchard. Now here's your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a better. Welcome inside to the VSiN studios here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This is the Lombardi Line, hanging out with you guys on a football Friday, going three wide as always. Femi Abebefe alongside Mike Palm, the VP of operations here at Circa Resort and Casino, and Mike Pritchard, our VSiN NFL analyst, played nearly a decade in the league, former first round pick, also a national champion with the Colorado Buffaloes in the early 90s. And gentlemen, how about Thursday night football last night, huh? The Chicago Bears shocking the world, shocking many people, winning outright as a 6-point dog, 40-20, just running up and down this Washington Commanders offense. Is the Bears no longer winless here in this 2023 regular season?
Did it shock you, Femi? It didn't shock me.
The manner of which they won did shock me. Like, not the fact that they won, yeah, but 40-20, that's a little surprising.
I mean, Fields played much better, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he still has some touch issues here and there. I thought they called a better game for him, too. I mean, let's throw the ball on first down, run on second down, and they ran the ball effectively between the tackles. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a big part of the first half.
With no running backs.
Yeah, they were able to run the ball effectively between the tackles. And, you know, there's a little bit of hope now in Chicago. I know that's, you know, that. The NFC is interesting because, you know, there's who the wild cards are going to be. I don't want to proclaim the Bears are now back in the hunt, but but they looked competitive, at least that they can be competitive. And they were dominant the first three quarters against Denver the week before, but the collapse again in the fourth quarter. And I mean, if he takes the field goal, they probably have two wins now. And we're talking about 2-3 instead of 1-4. And it's a different ballgame.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're still a young enough team to be able to improve. I mean, I think from a betting standpoint, that's what I would look at. Can Eberflus and that staff get this young group of players to improve? You know, and you know, you got Green Bay, that's a young team too, and you got Minnesota in transition. Detroit looks pretty good, right? But Chicago, they still have time to get it going and to build up some confidence. Now, the other side of that though is, my goodness, Washington. I mean, Del Rio, if you listen to me on these airwaves, I don't like the guy. Played against him, and he's a horrible coordinator. Horrible. And it shows up. I think they're 29th or 30th in the league in terms of points allowed as a defense. I mean, you said that they called a good game, Chicago. Mm-hmm. We could have called that game against that defense, right? I mean, that defense was so predictable and so too aggressive, really. I mean, corners and zone situations are going for interceptions. That's poor technique. That's bad coaching. You play in cover two in a red zone. Who does that? Who puts pressure on a safety in cover two in a red zone? It's not Tampa two, it's cover two, right? You don't have the linebackers that Tampa had. You play Tampa two. You don't have that, Del Rio. Why are you doing that? The double move stuff, I mean, all that stuff, it's like Fields and that offense, what they practice, the short practice that they had, the walkthroughs that they had became true. And it was everything that they worked on preparation-wise for that Washington defense. And that, to me, is just unacceptable. If you are evaluating the Washington coaching staff and the situation with that team, it is unacceptable. I don't know how they change it.
Let's stay with there and get your analysis on the other side of the ball with your friend Eric Bieniemy.
Yep. You know, when you're down with 17-0,
27-3.
You're kind of out of your game plan. You know, you're hoping to play complimentary football. You're hoping to stick with your game plan. You're hoping to help out Sam Howell, who, by the way, looked scared last night. That was his first primetime game as a starter. And it's like he looks scared.
And the Bears are a team that can't get to the quarterback. Least sacks in the league last year. They had the least through 4 weeks this year.
Right. When you're watching that offense, and a lot of stuff is built in terms of not hot routes, but just built in stuff. You can scat protection, you release five, which they did. Gibson just dropped the ball one time. But it's easy on the quarterback. He couldn't even recognize. And it was poorly disguised. I know they were talking about, I think Herb Street was talking about, oh, great disguise. I'm like, no, you can see the safety at 9 yards. That means somebody's coming. The safety's not at 9 yards, typically, or he's going to bail out. So you can see it coming. It's just, they weren't prepared for it, or Sam Howell just didn't recognize it, or offensively, they just weren't in their game plan. I mean, I would love to see Eric be able to run the ball, want to run the ball more. But at this point, with that defense allowing 30 points a game, whatever it is, you can't run the ball more.
Yeah, that defense for the Commanders, other than their week one win against the Cardinals, they've allowed 33, 37, 34, and now 40 in four consecutive weeks here. It's like, as a defensive coordinator, some people start to ask questions like, what are you doing? Like, why are you here if this is what the output's going to be? And this is not a team that's devoid of talent. Like, they have four first round picks on that defensive line. Mm-hmm. And we saw Chase Young being disruptive last night. And it seems like he's sort of back from the knee issues. You have Jonathan Allen, you have Daron Payne, you have Montez Sweat. Right. And then you have the corners on the outside, Emmanuel Forbes, he's a first round pick. Like, how much more talent do you need to get this thing up and right? Like, this to me just feels like it's purely a schematic issue that's plaguing the Washington Commanders.
When you are trying to jump a hitch route and it's just a possession route, and instead of just come up and make a tackle, what are they teaching you? Right? They're not teaching you anything. And if you're going to be susceptible to double moves, then obviously you're too aggressive. I mean, the route that DJ ran for that touchdown, that wasn't even a great route. It really wasn't. He was just, it was a trail. I don't know why he got into trail technique. I know there was a safety, but the safety was so far inside. But any move to the inside was going to influence that, right? And so all Justin Fields had to do was just throw it down the sideline. And I mean, it was just easy picking. It was like 7-on-7 in practice for Justin Fields in that game last night.
How about the third and two play when they're up?
Oh. You know, Prince is real fired up.
I'm fired up today.
The third and two play late in the game with 4 minutes to go.
I mean, he
pitches him the ball and there's nobody for 70 yards.
There's nobody for 70 yards. And it was just deplorable. It really was. It was not. You can't win. You can't even compete with that type of defense. And you can't say it was a short week for Washington. Del Rio has been around long enough to where he could add some type of game plan to kind of just keep everything in front of the guys. Like, don't be so aggressive. Make Justin Fields matriculate. Let's see if he has the patience. Let's see if he really is a true pocket passer. But they didn't even try to do that. They just opened up the door of the buffet for Chicago in that offense. And they walked through it and ate.
You mentioned Justin Fields. Last night in the postgame show on Amazon Prime, he said, quote, "I think these past couple of weeks we found an identity in our offense." Is that what you see, Pritch, when you watch the past couple of weeks here for the Chicago Bears? Or was it maybe the competition that they were going up against?
I think it's competition, but, you know, there's confidence there. And I can respect that from Justin Fields. But, I mean, your job as a defense coordinator is not to make him comfortable. Like, when they establish an identity, everybody wants to establish an identity. That's our goal. But the job as a defense is not to allow that to happen. So what does Chicago want to do? They want to run the ball. They want to do play action, right? And that's majority of teams out there. They do not want to play drop back. They do not want to make Justin Fields a pocket passer and read defenses and all that. Well, as a coordinator, you're supposed to make them do that, right? So
I thought Tampa did a good job of that when they went to Tampa. They made him complete, and he did it on one drive in the first set. They made him complete 5 or 6 throws to get to the end zone,
right?
Make him be consistent and have to do that. And that's sort of what their game plan was with him. Make him be good for a whole drive.
Right.
And we don't think he can do that.
Right. He can't. I mean, if you talk to defense coordinators, I've talked to a ton of them, obviously. And the thing is, you know, it's a guessing game a lot of times for the defense. And this helps you from a betting standpoint. But if we can disrupt an offense, if we can throw them off their timing, if we can throw them off a rhythm, you ever notice when a defense forces a field goal, they're celebrating? That's a win for a defense. Like, when you are, as an offensive player, when you are kicking a field goal, you're -4 because you're supposed to score a touchdown every time you get the ball. So from a betting standpoint, I think about that all the time, that it's a win for a defense to force a field goal. So between the 20s, you guys can do whatever you want, but in the red zone, we're going to clamp down. We're going to take this away. We're going to hone in on tendencies. We're going to make things difficult and force you to kick a field goal. Because if we got an offense that's humming, then we're going to win a game more times than not.
I think it was Steve Young back when he was working at ESPN. He said this, I want to say like a decade ago or so. He said, as an offense, every time that we kicked a field goal, we were that much closer to losing the game.
Right.
Like he said, like it's almost like it's like that much of a detriment. Like you mentioned, the -4 is the mentality. It's not the +3. It's we actually lost the opportunity to go ahead and get a touchdown. On the Bears note, though, here, you mentioned from a betting side of things, the Bears have gone over in five of their games here this season. Is this just going to be the thing? Like, their game next week against Minnesota, right now it's at 48.5, 49 in some spots here. If the offense starts to find this identity and starts to hum, we know that defensively they're susceptible to big plays. We saw that even last night at Washington struggles. Mm-hmm. Do we just kind of go and back these Bears overs until the wheels fall off? Because so far it's been, you're living on an island if you've been doing it since week one.
And they bet the under last night again, right? I mean, yeah. I was this touched seven at Circa on Monday wow. night and got to 5.5 yesterday afternoon, close six. Mm-hmm. So when I was waiting to see the Matrix when it comes out after kickoff, I said, well, I mean, obviously we're going to want the Bears to win the game. I think that's going to, mm-hmm. but we would have been real good if the Bears just would have covered it. Like Washington by five or less was also a good result, but the perfect was Bears winning over. So we hit the bullseye. Yeah, yeah. We hit the bullseye there.
Yeah. What's going to help the Bears defense? I think Eberflus, his trademark is trying to get the ball. Right. They want to tackle the ball. They want to strip it. They did that last night. And so if the young players understand that more and they can generate more turnovers, maybe they'll get more stops. But they're still susceptible to giving up a lot of points, too.
Yeah, it's a team that I think.
Against great offenses.
Yeah, against great offenses. Right. Yeah. And like Fields, like once he kind of plays from behind, they start doing all sorts of loosey-goosey mm-hmm. stuff and the turnovers. So it's like you're either going to get a turnover or maybe it's a big play. So this team feels like an over team for me here. But the Washington Commanders, the schedule that they have coming up next, they're at Atlanta next week at the Giants. If they can't at least go 1-1 in that stretch, we might be looking at a new head coach in our nation's capital. I think this could be Rivera, who's squarely now on the hot seat. Three straight losses after starting the year 2-0. All that good vibe and good energy with Josh Harris, the new ownership that's there. I think the fan base wants a little bit more here from the head coach of the Washington Commanders. We'll continue to break this down and break down the other games on this Week 5 slate. Just getting warmed up here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with Mike Palm and Mike Pritchard. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You'll also get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page, sort picks by sport, matchup, event, date, and more. Check the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI, and see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up today for only $19 for your first month at VSiN.com/subscribe. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line, hanging out with you guys on a Football Friday. Femi Abebefe, Mike Palm, Mike Pritchard here from the Circa Resort and Casino. We do have two guests that will be joining us on the show, by the way. Coming up in 15 minutes, Randy Mueller, former general manager in the NFL. He will be joining us as we break down all things NFL, looking ahead to this Week 5 Sunday slate. Then at 2:30 Eastern, 11:30 Pacific, Barrett Salee, college football writer over at CBS Sports, will give us the college football landscape as the college football season starting to heat up here just a little bit here as we're turning the calendar to the month of October. Red River is this week and my favorite rivalry in all of college sports that doesn't involve a team that I root for.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, Apple Cup is obviously number one for me, but Red River's number two.
In all of sports, bigger than any college
sports.
Bigger than Duke, Carolina?
I love Red River is on my bucket list. If I could go to any college event, because I've been to many.
You just want to go to the fair. That's all. You want to go to Texas State Fair.
Maybe I want to go to the State Fair of Texas. I think the pageantry is cool. Yeah. You get the burn orange. You get the I think it's a cool kind of situation there that they got at Red River. And it's a heated rivalry. A lot of alums down in Dallas.
Somebody asked me, I think it was the guys from Iowa. Like, you know, it's a 9 a.m. Pacific every year. Do people care out there? I go, it is
massive.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. That is always the feature game in the morning. And you got red and you got orange and it doesn't matter. They're here and they're mm-hmm. it's their life. That game.
And it's in the Cotton Bowl and it should stay in the Cotton Bowl forever. I know I'm sure Jerry Jones would love it to be at AT&T Stadium and all that stuff. But like, they got to keep it in the Cotton Bowl down there in Dallas because that's how it was meant to be. But before we continue on, we wanted to touch on the news that we got yesterday. The tragic news, obviously, the passing of former NFL Hall of Famer Dick Butkus, the legend for the Chicago Bears, passed away at the age of 80. Mike, I know you were in Illinois this past week here with the Circa Sports launch over there in the state of Illinois. I'm sure a lot of people sad with the news that we got yesterday here. Dick Butkus passing away at the age of 80.
Yeah, you got a lot of great retrospectives on the news last night and then real early this morning before we left on Butkus, all those old NFL films and his opponents talking about him. Very impressive. I was kept thinking about our friend Michael Lombardi, who the show is named for, in his book. And when he talked about George Halas, he talked about George Halas had a systematic draft philosophy, right? And so the 1965 NFL draft, Pritch, what, 25 years before, were you 90?
No, I was 91.
91, yeah, okay. Yep. The Giants had the first pick. They took Tucker Fredrickson, a running back from Auburn.
Okay.
49ers had the second pick, Ken Willard, fullback from North Carolina. The Bears had 3 and 4. And went Butkus, Sayers.
Right.
Damn. Now, I don't remember Gale Sayers. I could only watch film. But my dad, who's a diehard Bear fan, and of course, Walter Payton, said still to this day, Gale Sayers was the greatest running back of all time, but obviously tore his knee up, the Kansas Comet. So that's something. Some other notables in that draft. Fifth was the Cowboys, who drafted Craig Morton, who became their quarterback for Cal. St. Louis Cardinals drafted Joe Namath, 12th.
Wow.
The Lions drafted Fred Biletnikoff, 39th.
Wow.
And 49th, the Baltimore Colts drafted a linebacker from Pittsburgh, Marty Schottenheimer. So just some interesting
hitters.
Some interesting names from that draft. But you talk about how do you hit a draft any better than that? Butkus Sayers.
You don't. You get it right. They got it right. I mean, Dick Butkus, and so I took a trip to Illinois, one of my three trips as a college player, well, high school player at the time. So you're talking about mid to late 80s. And you can still feel the presence of Dick Butkus on that campus and the pride there. But no, as a player, he motivated so many people. He intimidated a lot of more people, but just an incredible player. But then also what he's done for the league, like gridiron greats, when you think about Mike Ditka too. And so he gave everything towards this game. Because the game gave him so much, but he gave everything to the game. And certainly, we know it's inevitable. These moments are going to happen. But to pay tribute to one of the greats is something we should do. And a lot of people should do.
Yeah, the Bears chairman, George H. McCaskey, said in a statement that Dick was the ultimate Bear and one of the greatest players in NFL history. He passed away in his sleep couple nights ago in Malibu. And I, for me, I was born in 1990, so I didn't see Dick Butkus ever play, but I've seen the NFL films.
Yeah, you were born in 1990?
Bro.
Good Lord.
turned 33 this past July.
Wow.
But I think just from seeing the NFL films, you're doing the math over here. Like, what's
going
on?
Jesus year. You got to get through 33.
We got to it.
I'm like, this guy was born in 1990.
I can't believe that.
I know. And Mel Kiper was talking about me in 1990.
Hey, we're hitting all age ranges here on the Lombardi line. But I think just like Dick Butkus was like, at least growing up and seeing those NFL films, like the Steve Sable, like the films that they had and all that stuff, it's like he was like the epitome of the monsters of the Midway, you know? Because like later on, then you get like Mike Singletary and all those guys. But like that middle linebacker position there for the Chicago Bears, it's like a legacy position. And it starts with Dick Butkus, at least from what I remember and being able to consume as a fan and a historian of the league, going back and seeing a lot of those old clips and stuff. And it's cool that he gets to see or gets like the flowers now when like he passes away to be like, okay, everybody gets to remember him and all that stuff, because he truly is one of the pillars of the league and one of the pillars of one of the more famous franchises in the Chicago Bears. So it was fun to at least be able to get to honor Dick Butkus there passing away at the age of 80.
Also pretty good comedic actor. I mean, he carved out a little acting career there later. If you go back and listen to these guys talk about everything he did to get an advantage, intimidating the young, spitting on the center to make the ball wet.
Yeah.
And they say, you know, he was a very good defensive captain, too. Mm-hmm. Red offenses, anticipated. But, you know, the defensive signal caller can't say hut.
Right.
And he would come and he would hut, hut. And then the refs would warn him. He'd do it again. They'd say, Dick, next time. He goes, well, that's my linebacker signal. Yeah. Like, come on. That's not your linebacker. You know, he did every advantage you would try to get.
Yeah. So many people will have insight on him.
It happens to be the same cadence. Yeah.
Right. So many people will have insight on him. But one of the things that stood out was his technique in terms of how he wanted to tackle. Like, I don't know if you guys heard this. He was always a guy. You know, you think about tackling right now, but he was a guy that would tackle you high.
and throw you back and catch you and throw you back. He was like a clothesline tackler.
Right. Yeah. But because he was his thought process. Yeah. And I heard this. Yeah. Somebody interviewed him and they talked about it. And it talked about how a ball carrier, your reaction is to try to put your hand down to brace the fall. Mm-hmm. But if you're in a brace or a bear hug, how are you going to hold on to the rock too? So it was fascinating because I never thought a linebacker thought that way. But he was a former running back. And he thought the way of a running back and what made him uncomfortable. So that he transferred that to playing linebacker and the rest is history.
I think he had the second most forced fumbles in the history. To your point about that.
I heard this. I mean, I was fascinated because I have never heard that somebody describe their thought process as a tackler and what that would do. Because I'm a ball carrier, right? And I'm like, you know what? I don't want to be bear hugged. Like, if you go after my legs, I can stiff arm you. I could do stuff and keep you off of me. But if I get bear hugged, I can't do anything. And then if you slam me to the ground, then I'm really mad, right? And he did that to a lot of people, obviously.
Michael Lombardi obviously is off today, but he will be back on the show tomorrow. And I can't wait to hear his stories about Dick Butkus because we've had conversations about him just organically because Michael always talks about how people will discuss the players of yesteryear. Like, oh, they wouldn't be able to play in today's game. They wouldn't be able to hang with today's athletes. And Michael, he told me, he said, you know who Dick Butkus would be if he played today? He would be Micah Parsons. He would be like that fifth rusher kind of going in and like going against those guards on the interior and all that stuff. And it's like, it kind of goes back and shows you that some of those guys from the yesteryears, it's like, yeah, like times were different and like the everything now is bigger, faster, stronger. But a lot of those guys, it's they're timeless and they would be able to transition into any sort of era of the National Football League. And I think Dick Butkus is definitely one of them. So. We'll see. Dick Butkus passes away at the age of 80 here. And I'm sure the Bears will have something special. They have their home game will be next Sunday against the Minnesota Vikings. I'm sure they'll have a moment of silence and maybe we'll get some patches or something on the helmet decals to honor Dick Butkus here. But once again, on the other side, we will have Randy Mueller joining us here, former general manager in the NFL. Well, maybe we'll get Randy's thoughts here on Dick Butkus and any stories that he might have. But we'll get his thoughts on this upcoming slate in the NFL. Barrett Slee will be joining us at 2:30 Eastern, 11:30 Pacific to give us his college football slates as college football thoughts, I should say, from Barrett Slee on this slate. But before we head to break here, what game are you guys in the NFL most perplexed by when you look at the line? When you, the game that you're perplexed by that you want answers on that right now it's kind of giving you a little bit of trouble.
Ravens
Steelers
playing 4.5 against a rivalry game. I mean, a divisional game. I mean, That's normally a tighter matchup. I know there's an injury to a quarterback in Pickett, but and offensively the Pittsburgh Steelers stink. But there's something about rivalry games, though. Right? I mean, we saw that with CSU and CU. I mean, that's college. I get it. But certain thing in the pros, rivalry games are just a different animal.
Packers Raiders on Monday night.
Is Jimmy still in the protocol?
I think he still is.
Maybe it'll be another start for Aiden O'Connell. Randy Mueller joins us next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with Mike Palm and Mike Pritchard. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Looking to be a better bettor? Of course you are. And tens of thousands of people have already turned to Juice Reel. That's Juice, R-E-E-L, in the App Store. Juice Reel is not a sports book. It's a tool to help you beat the books. Juice Reel connects all of your sports betting accounts into one app, loads all of your betting history, and gives you an analytical edge backed by nearly $1 billion in bets from sports bettors in all 50 states. Use that data to follow the winners and fade the losers. Don't place another bet until you've downloaded this revolutionary sports betting tool, Juice Reel. That's juice like orange juice. Reel, R-E-E-L. It's absolutely free. Download Juice Reel to your iPhone or Android device today and become a better bettor. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line hanging out here on a football Friday. Mike Pritchard on the far end, Mike Palm here in the middle, Femi Abebefe here on the left side of your screen. And joining us now to talk all things NFL, former NFL general manager, was executive of the year in 2000, now has a football GM podcast over at The Athletic. It's the one and only Randy Mueller joining us on the Lombardi Line. Randy, before we get into all of the games here on this week five slate, I wanted to ask you about Dick Butkus because we had the conversation in the last segment remembering Dick Butkus, who passed away, the Bears legend, at the age of 80 yesterday. And in the league, when guys like this, like I feel like the stories are just so many. Anything that you'd like to share here? Any words on the passing of Dick Butkus, who passed away yesterday?
Well, I think the big takeaway is the fact that Dick Butkus was an icon in the game for those in the game. And he's one of the few guys who, and I've heard this from many coaches, from old-time players, who could put fear into the opponent. And these guys that play this game, and Mike can tell you, there's very few players you fear for physicality on the other side of the ball. This was one. And this guy is a true caricature in that he did things that we didn't see done at the times he did it. And then he even became a bigger and a bigger icon once he got out of the game. So one of the all-time great defenders. He would definitely fall in that category of the Hall of Fame being good and great. He is a great player, and it's a tough loss for all of us in the NFL.
Yeah, well said there, Randy, and great to talk to you again. I got a question in regards to this game across the pond, as they like to say, with Buffalo traveling. Jacksonville has stayed overseas. Yep. You know, the logistics of all this. Does Jacksonville, I mean, it's been a tough matchup the last few years between Jacksonville and Buffalo. And we're looking at a number, it's -5.5. You can find -5.5 across the board, what I'm looking at. So, Randy, the logistics of this matchup, I mean, is there an advantage for Jacksonville having stayed over in Buffalo trying to acclimate as they travel?
I think it's a great point and one of my games of the week because of that, Mike. As you know, the NFL has staged games internationally many times, but they've never had a team stay over to play two in a row. Obviously, they are greasing the skids for someday having a team, I think, in London. And I think it is a giant advantage for Jacksonville. I think they've been there all week. They're the most comfortable team. And having taken teams over there in my history, it is a thing to travel. It's a different thing when you wake up the next morning and your plane is landing and you've got time change and all kinds of extremities and disruptions to your, you know, weekly flow. As you know, guys become creatures of habit and get into their weekly flows fairly easy. Now, Jacksonville has been able to establish one. I think we'll see a different team because of it on the field. And I'm with you. They're given 5.5 points. I'm getting 5.5 points. That would be hard for me to turn my back on. I think the Jaguars in this case are going to be at a little different level with their legs, with their energy level, with their effort and everything else. And I think it'll stand to show on the field.
Randy, the Colts host the Titans this week. Jonathan Taylor is going to stay with the franchise. I want to ask you more of a macro question about when there's tumultuous off seasons and then a player is retained, the effect that may have on a locker room and on a franchise. And we think about Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. I was convinced he wouldn't be back when he didn't travel to the playoff game. And then, you know, the market wasn't there for him and he stayed. And now Jonathan Taylor, is there any negative lingering effect on a locker room in those situations?
Well, I think there can be. I think it's one that needs full management of the situation. I think in Indy, Chris Ballard has tried to do that. I think you saw early on in this saga with his frustrations, he is in Chris Ballard, the way it came out that he was frustrated with a lot of things because it just didn't make sense to him. The holdout didn't make sense. He knew he wasn't going to be able to pay him. So I think there is lingering effects. And I think at some point you have to decide, is this guy going to be part of the solution or do we need to move on? And I don't know where Jonathan Taylor's mindset is, but yes, it can linger in your locker room. I don't think you want that. And I think at some point they're going to probably have to decide, are we willing to pay it back in this system, $12-14 million a year? That's probably as big a question philosophically as it is anything to do with Jonathan Taylor. So I'm not sure the Colts will ever commit to that in the system that they run. Obviously, he would be a big help to Anthony Richardson, the quarterback. I don't know how much they will get out of him or when he will actually play, but there seems to be more questions than answers for me, even as a former GM in this stage. I think in general managers get labeled as guys who sit in rooms and pick teams and pick players. That's not the case. You have to manage people. You have to have people skills. You have to have problem-solving skills just as much as you have to be able to see talent. And so this is one of those situations where it's not in the GM notebook to manage this kind of stuff, but Chris Ballard's had to do it.
We're speaking with Randy Mueller, former NFL Executive of the Year here on the Lombardi Line. Well, Randy, let's talk about managing a player and managing talent and turn it over to Chase Claypool, who the Bears just traded to the Miami Dolphins. And this is a player in Claypool who Pittsburgh couldn't wait to get rid of him. They got a second round pick for it. Chicago definitely couldn't wait to get rid of him, having that pit swap earlier this morning with the Miami Dolphins. If you're Miami, how do you go about implementing a guy like Chase Claypool, who feels like he might be on his last chance in the NFL?
Well, I think that's part of the risk reward, right? I think you hit it on the head. He probably is on his third strike. It didn't work in Pittsburgh. It hasn't worked in Chicago. But I think we have reasons to think that maybe there is a chance in a different environment with a different scheme. It was said that he was struggling with the way he was being used in Chicago and questioning all kinds of offensive strategies. That's a shocker, right? We haven't talked about that much when it comes to the Bears. So I think going to Miami, he has a different locker room, a different head coach, a little different level of offensive IQ. So I think it's actually a good move. They gave up next to nothing to get him, right? We can talk about it being a trade. It was for a Starbucks card. That's really what it was. So there's really no risk. There's no risk. So he goes there, and they already have Jalen Waddle. They already have Tyreek Hill. They already have Braxton Berrios. He's probably an upgrade over Robbie Chosen, Sed Wilson, all the other backups. So I think it's great insurance for Miami. I think he will fit in, and I think he has to fit in because his career is at stake. He's on strike number three. So he has to do everything right for the team. And they really, he's playing for his career. So I like it. I think it's a good move for Miami. I struggle with what Chicago is doing. You know, they gave up really a second round pick to get him. They ended up being the 32nd pick in the draft. So you can debate that one until you're blue in the face. But I do like this move for Miami for sure.
All right, Randy. We have teams that kind of got out the gate the first month of the season. We're now in October and teams are going to try to distinguish themselves. Do you have a team, either conference or even a couple of teams, either conference, that is poised to distinguish themselves as we move through the month of October into November?
Well, there's definitely been some surprises. There's some teams that we thought were going to be better than they are. I think most of us thought the Giants would be a little better. They've obviously struggled. I didn't think Jacksonville would be sitting here at 2-2 at this point either. So those teams have struggled. I think the teams that I would look up to and favor a little bit are Cleveland Browns. I think they're better than where I thought they would be. A team like the Houston Texans, better. C.J. Stroud has been, in my opinion, the best of these rookie quarterbacks. He's been outstanding. I think the next week, and I'm glad they moved the trade deadline back, Mike, because that's always been a thorn in my side. It was week six forever, and now it's week eight. So now you really get to know your team, and teams can strengthen themselves over the next 2 or 3 weeks. So I like that idea. I think we have a long ways to go, and you know how these are. These seasons are long. I always say we're about 3 weeks from a total mutiny in this league with any particular team. That's just the way it is.
Right.
So we're going to see more game management, more roster management over the next 2 or 3 weeks as we approach the trade deadline.
Randy, we got about a minute left. The game of the weekend, obviously Sunday night, Dallas at the undefeated 49ers. Our friend Femi is a diehard Cowboy fan, so I'd like you to settle this debate as a successful evaluator of talent. Simply, can the Dallas Cowboys win a Super Bowl with Dakota Prescott at quarterback?
I definitely think they can, especially if they keep playing like they are on defense. I get it. I think this is a good benchmark for them, but I don't think it's a must win. I think a lot of people think if they can't beat the 49ers, they don't have a chance. Well, teams change. Teams evolve. Injuries happen over the course of a whole season. I think the one thing Dallas has done different to this point this year is the complementary football that both sides of the ball are playing. I want to see Dallas, though, grind out a good, tough physical win in a close game. I haven't seen that yet, and I do think San Francisco can do that. So I understand that this is a big game, and like you mentioned, the game of the week so far, or the game of the year for that matter. I'll be interested to see how it shakes out. I think right now San Francisco is the best team in the NFC, so it'll be a fun game to watch. But just know this, if Dallas can't win, they're not out of it. Trust me.
There we go. See, if they can't win, we still have a chance. Let's still play the rest of the games. Yeah. He is Randy Mueller, former NFL executive, executive of the year in the year 2000. Check out his podcast over at the Athletic Football GM Pod. Randy, we appreciate the time. Be well.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Awesome stuff there from Randy Mueller. We'll turn our attention to college football slate on the other side.
This is the Lombardi Line with Mike Palm and Mike Pritchard. Now here is your host, Timmy Abbefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Don't forget on DraftKings Sportsbook, this season, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. Download the app and use promo code VEGAS when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Sounds like a hell of a deal.
Somebody should jump on that. This is the Lombardi Line. Femi Abefe, Mike Palm, Mike Pritchard here hanging out at the Circa Resort and Casino. We thank Randy Mueller, former NFL Executive of the Year, for joining us in the last segment. If you missed it, make sure you check it out in podcast form, the Lombardi Line. Get it wherever you get your podcast. Also, before we get to college football, do you guys realize I think today is the drawing for the Lombardi Line, for the VSiN Clash contest?
Okay.
For the promos
and all
that
stuff. Can you explain how this lottery works?
So it's going to work like the NBA lottery. And I think it was Follow the Money had the most,
right.
So they will have the best chances to go ahead and win.
Are you second here?
So Lombardi Line was second, yeah. And I forgot who was third. Like, yeah. I forget the rest of the order here, but second most ping pong balls we will have, apparently,
okay.
On this $1,000 voucher in a futures ticket on a Super Bowl futures. So
I think whatever show it is, that 80% of whatever, if you hit the ticket, that 80% goes to the people that work behind the scenes.
Behind the glass.
Yeah, right? That's a great idea.
I mean, I think that everybody should agree to that.
Totally.
Right?
I think it's
totally.
A fair deal.
Right?
Yep.
I don't even see fist pumping back there. These guys are just like, whatever.
And they're like, why did we just give up 20? Why did we? What happened?
Well, some work on multiple shows, too, though. So
yeah. That's right? True. That's yeah. True.
That's true.
A little bit of overlap.
They got a lot of dogs in this lottery drawing. <Yeah. laughs>
I wish I was in their position. But that'll be at some point today, I think. I don't know. Maybe I'll check my email later this afternoon to figure that out.
Maybe.
Maybe. I got some stuff I got to do. Got to run some errands before the weekend. But let's get to college football, because we do have, like I said, my second favorite rivalry in all of college sports. Red River is on Saturday. That is tomorrow, coming up at the Cotton Bowl in Dallas. Oklahoma versus Texas. The Longhorns, 5-point favorites. The consensus number total is at 60.5. And we've seen Texas play a statement game. They beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa. We haven't really seen Oklahoma get tested. Not sure what to expect from the Sooners in this matchup. How do you guys break this one down?
Well, I'm debating playing this in Humans contest, but then I saw in Bill 80's daily email that Humans anticipates 5 or 6 plays on this game, Texas and over. How did it go for everybody that was on LSU last week, like me?
Yeah.
Right? So I don't like to get on too much consensus, actually. But I lean Texas just because I don't think Oklahoma's played an explosive offense. I don't think Oklahoma's played anybody can run the ball the way Texas. So I think Oklahoma's more of an unknown, although you know Venables was going to make this defense better, right? You see the fall off at Clemson. That's the reason why I don't think they're going to be able to maintain the elite level they were at. So I do lean Texas. And, you know, the over is actually not a bad play, because with Gabriel, they can be explosive. They can score quick. So those are my two leans. I don't know if I'll put some money in before it kicks or not.
Yeah, and then there's going to be wrinkles in this game. I mean, OU, I think, will have more wrinkles than Texas. Yeah. The thing about Texas and how I look at this game or approach a game would be this team is poised to go to the playoff and win a national championship. That's what they're poised to do. They have the roster. They have the depth. They're executing. Sark's got this team going. To be upended by OU just throws them off. I mean, obviously, this game's been circled. This game's been a focal point, too, as well as Alabama, as well as everybody else. But I think this team is looking at OU, but beyond that. And so a rivalry situation, if Texas is ready to go, I lean towards Texas, too.
I think
the situation.
Do you think it factors into their head, either head coach Venables or Sark? If you're going to get to the playoff, you're going to have to beat this team twice, because this is most likely the rematch of the Big 12 championship game. How far is the Cotton Bowl from Jerry World? Shifting the scene.
Dallas to Arlington.
Right. You're shifting the scene a bit, but you're probably going to have to beat them twice. So I don't know if that factors into it or not. But both teams have it in front of them, right? It's all in front of them. Both of them, they come into this game undefeated, a marquee game. As much as Dallas, San Francisco is in on Sunday night, this is on Saturday morning.
Big weekend for Texas. Big weekend for the state. State fair of Texas, then you get Dallas and the Niners, Sunday night football. Hopefully it's a good one to cap it off. But yeah, I think from this game, no play for me, but I'll be definitely eyeing it as somebody who's invested into the Heisman market. Sad for our guy, Jaden Daniels, last week. Played a hell of a game, man. If they pulled that out, he's right up there.
We went so hard from down 14 to get the lead and the cover in the fourth quarter. It was frustrating the amount of emotional effort I put into the game. To lose it. You know what I mean? It was like,
I was watching the final drive standing up. This is your Heisman moment.
Right.
And then that last play, it hit the kid in the hands. It was tough, but Jaden Daniels, hell of a performance. Unfortunately, the LSU defense didn't want to show up, but I digress. But from a Heisman standpoint, obviously Quinn Ewers is among the favorites. I believe around like 9-1, 10-1. Dylan Gabriel's creeping up as sort of a dark
dark horse in that 20-1 range. So curious to see what happens from a Heisman market standpoint. I think this is the biggest game for that market coming up tomorrow. Let's continue, though, to break down this college football slate. Alabama, we talked about them. They're going to be over at College Station taking on Texas A&M. And the Tide are a short road favorite, 2-point favorites with a total of 46. This has been bet down from 50 at open. Are the Tide vulnerable coming up tomorrow, and do they get their second loss of the season, first in the SEC?
I don't think it can run the ball on Texas A&M. I've watched every snap. I went back and watched the tape of Auburn because I was in California and lost Auburn, which that result is flattered by Auburn taking Georgia to the wire, right, and moving the ball on Georgia. And then I watched live the Arkansas game. This defensive front of Texas A&M is no joke. And the tackles for loss, they disrupt the drives with these tackles for loss and get you, you know, off schedule.
Right.
Milroe's going to have to play a good game to win this. And everybody says, oh, it's so short. How can you not take Alabama? How can you not take Alabama here? I'm probably not going to play the game, but I've been impressed the last 2 weeks with A&M. I think Johnson's son is smooth with the ball.
Right.
If you give him time to throw the ball, he's very accurate. Mm-hmm. By the way, how big is Brad Johnson?
He's traveling.
I guess him and his boys are working out with Whitney.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's unbelievable.
Is he Jack now?
Bigger than my torso. His arms are... They kept showing him and his wife during the Arkansas. It was way bigger than what he ever played.
Well, of course, playing quarterback. No, his son well-traveled, by the way.
Definitely.
But it's a tough place to play, too. And I think the mystique of Alabama is not traveling with them anymore. The landscape of college football, they're no longer getting the top players. Everything's dispersed now. And so Saban's got... He's got work to do with this team. And I don't know if they're galvanized, if they're a good enough team to travel and put together a solid performance that way against a team that I think certainly with that atmosphere is going to be ready to go at home.
I do think, though, that when you look at what Mississippi did to LSU, and I mean, LSU has athletes on defense.
Very good
ones. They had no players on the whole side of the field on that one touchdown, but... They held Mississippi in the end zone only once. Mississippi getting to the end zone, and then you saw what Mississippi. Yeah. So I think maybe the move to the total is the right play here. Maybe this is a real defensive football game, grinded out type of football game, and you know it's played in the 30s. I don't know, but I think it'll come down to the last play of the game. It'll be a field goal one way or the other.
Yeah, and Bama's defense has been really good as well. Like, other than the Texas game, I know that game was giving them some issues, but Bama's defense has shown up so far this season. Their offense, not as much. Speaking of LSU, they're going to Elliott's, our producer, his old stomping grounds, Como. Columbia, Missouri is where the LSU Tigers will be taking on the Missouri Tigers. LSU right now, 5.5-point favorites, total 64.5. I worry about the letdown for LSU to where it's like the CFP dreams are probably over. Can still win the conference, but the CFP national title dreams over, suffering a second loss before the month of October. But do you think that the Tigers can respond here, or is this Mizzou's coming out party against a big name team?
Well, I mean, is Kelly still building this thing? Because I know there was lofty expectations on the LSU. I was curious about this program. Because of those expectations. Now, haven't played in Columbia, haven't played against Mizzou years ago. Difference is different, right? But this is a team, and I talked about this, I don't know, they're probably a middle of the pack SEC team right now. But before, they were at the bottom. They were like in the basement, right? But over time, they've worked their way up into, I guess, the middle of the pack of, I don't know, what, 20 teams. But no, it's going to be a spirited effort. And that's something that you can count on a lot of times. And to your point, Fim, if LSU is going through any type of letdown, any type of lack of focus, they can get got in this game. So this is a dangerous one. I wouldn't bet it. I mean, if I did, I'd lean towards Mizzou, though.
If you were Missouri, would you rather LSU had won that game at Mississippi or lost that game at Mississippi?
I mean,
if you're better, I'm going to say if you're LSU, but if you're better, how do you analyze that?
Well, truly, if my playoff hopes are gone, then it's going to be tough to get these kids motivated for whatever. You talk about a conference. Is that it? Is it motivation to play Mizzou on the road? I don't know. I mean, they played Florida State. They played all these big games already, and they're looking on. They're out on the outside looking in. They can't wait for expansion at this point. If you're LSU, but that's just a tough situation for a bunch of kids to get rallied up. That's a tough travel trip too, to get to Mizzou.
They got grass now, though.
They do. They got natural. No sand on the turf.
Still
and all
sends
that.
J.C. Lauterbach a Christmas card every year. Let me tell you.
We'll talk more college football in hour number two, but we'll get to the NFL line moves as we begin our journey on the DraftKings Network.